Hello, this is Robert Ambrose, KPTZ board president and host of Rhythm Connection. Like you, I'm waiting to hear Dr. Locke's weekly COVID-19 update. I depend on KPTZ to hear this crucial information because it allows me to better understand how the virus is affecting our community. It also helps me gauge when I might see my distant new grandson. You'd depend on KPTZ to hear Dr. Locke too, and KPTZ depends on you to keep broadcasting. Please consider clicking on the Donate Now button at kptz.org to give us your support for our efforts. Thank you.
KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners' weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates, held as a virtual meeting during the COVID pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Tom Locke and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
Our conversation later, but it is 9:45, which is when we have our KPTZ listeners join us, as well as Willie Bentz, Director of Emergency Management, and Dr. Tom Locke, our health officer. Before I hand it off to you, Dr. Locke, Carolyn, we just got an email that says that your AVC is on and can be heard through Zoom. So there's something that can be.
Is that a plus? Like it can be heard?
I'm wondering if that's typing, perhaps.
Or when you're on the phone over there.
Or phone.
Oh, it's a very sensitive ceiling mic, so usually people can hear me type or whisper in the chambers. So.
Okay, we will try to eliminate any outside noise, but bear with us, Dr. Locke and Willie. We're in our first hybrid meeting and still trying to figure out the kinks. I'm not drinking my breakfast smoothie because I don't want you at all to have to hear that. Now you have my tummy rumble instead. Okay, welcome. Hope you had a nice weekend. What do you have for us, Dr. Locke?
Yes, lovely weekend, and I'm just noticing the closed caption scroll is a new feature that is great. It's very accurate, very quick. So I think that's that's a real boon. So the update in terms of COVID, nationally we're starting to see cases rise again. Actually up by 60% over the last 2 weeks, although that's from a relatively low number. So there are now about 19,000 new cases of COVID diagnosed each day in the U.S. Fortunately, the death rate is staying way down. It's at its lowest point since the beginning of the pandemic. However, even at that point, 250 Americans die every day of COVID-19. Almost all of them unvaccinated is the pattern we're seeing now. And the increased activity around the country is not evenly distributed. It's concentrated in areas with low vaccination rates. Right now, my home state of Missouri is kind of the epicenter for COVID outbreak in the United States. And in Missouri, it's almost all Delta variant. Places like Arkansas, Texas, Nevada are also getting hit very hard. And there the Delta variant is predominating as well. Fortunately, Washington State is one of those states where we're not seeing an increase. We're seeing continued decrease COVID activity. So we're down another 21%. In the state, we're down 19%. Hospitalizations are decreasing, and the death rate has dropped another 41%. So on average, about 8 Washington citizens die, or I should say residents die of COVID on a daily basis. Here in Jefferson County, our rates have gone up just slightly. We've had 15 cases in the last 2 weeks, so that creates a case rate of 47 per 100,000, up from 34 from the previous reporting period. And it's in the similar range in Clallam and Kitsap. Clallam is at 51 cases per 100,000. Kitsap is 59. So those are some of the lowest numbers we've seen in a long time. Our vaccination efforts, vaccination rates have really slowed down in the state and way sooner than we would have liked them to. So statewide, we're about 51% of the population is fully vaccinated. Or if you look at those eligible, so 12 and above, it's 60% of the eligible population is now fully vaccinated. In Jefferson County, it's higher. 65% of Jefferson residents are fully vaccinated. 67.8% have had at least one vaccine. And of the eligible population, we're at 70% of the eligible population, 12 and older, are fully vaccinated. So this is among the highest rates in the state still, second in the state in the case of fully vaccinated. But it's not where we really need to be to control the variants. We need population immunity rates in the 80-85% range to really control the transmission of variants. And where we knew very early on that we were in a race with the variants, that if we didn't get people vaccinated soon enough, the variants would predominate. And unfortunately, that is what's coming to pass. I was just going to look at our the latest reports we received on Friday. We get the variant report from the state, and it's a because it takes a long time to do this genetic testing. These reports are always 3 weeks lagging behind what's really going on. But what we're seeing is the same pattern that we're seeing elsewhere in the country, and that is the Alpha variant, which was originally from the United Kingdom. This was the predominant strain in Washington State a couple of months ago, but now it's being displaced by the Gamma and the Delta variant. So Alpha variant has dropped from 47% to 43%. The Gamma variant, which is the Brazilian strain, has actually dropped from 23% to 12%. And then the Delta variant is making up the difference. So it's gone from 11% to 27%. And we think it's going to be the predominant strain in a matter of a month or so. And it's just simple natural selection. It's transmitted more efficiently, so gradually it becomes the predominant strain. And fortunately, it does not seem to be making people sicker than the other strains, but it's definitely more contagious. So when we see a person in a household with Delta variant, usually everyone in that household gets the infection. And that's worrisome if you're looking at workplaces or at schools or crowded indoor gatherings where with the variants, we're much more likely to see what are called high attack rates. So high percentages of people that are susceptible will in fact get infected. As I've reported before, that the pandemic has definitely bifurcated. There's really two pandemics going on. For those that are vaccinated, it's almost all good news. The vaccine appears to be highly protective against the variants. People are returning to pre-pandemic levels of activity in many respects, and we're not seeing adverse consequences for that. So not only was it predicted that that would be safe, in actuality, it seems to be quite safe. We're just not seeing increases in disease. Whereas for those that are unvaccinated, the pandemic is going on unabated and is likely going to get worse as these more transmissible variants predominate. And so we're trying to get that warning out there, is that we know that what we've done so far has not persuaded people to be vaccinated, but they need to be prepared for the likelihood that they will become infected in the next 3 to 6 months, and to have a plan for dealing with that. I recommend that people have a home testing kit. When they develop signs of respiratory illness, they check themselves, or they be checked in a medical facility, and that they stay isolated. I've been getting a lot of questions recently about, well, why not just get the infection and get protected that way? And it is true that natural infection provides some immunity, but the evidence says very clearly it's inferior to vaccine-induced immunity. So vaccine-induced immunity is much more protective than natural immunity, and you don't run the risk, the 10 to 30% of getting long COVID, or the 5 to 10% risk of being hospitalized. Or if you're a child, it's around 2% of children who are getting COVID or now being hospitalized. So in fact, people who have had COVID still need to get vaccinated, because it's really only vaccination that's going to give them good protection against the variants that are likely coming. So we continue to work on that, is to try and make the case nationally, statewide, and the local level, why it's important to get vaccinated, and to do it now, because it takes anywhere from 5 to 6 weeks from when you start a two-dose series before you're really fully protected. And we also ask people who have chosen not to be vaccinated, you have to be very cognizant about protecting other household members, people in the workplace, people that in houses of worship. So you can't just think of yourself. This is a contagious disease, and you have to, even though many young people think that they're not too concerned about the risk that the virus imposes on them personally, we're really urging people to think of the risk that it imposes and can create for others as well. And then finally, I just mentioned we're working on schools for next year. The CDC put out their recommendation for schools. Washington State is finalizing theirs. I'll be meeting with the school superintendents tomorrow morning. So we have to start working on that now, because the goal is to have full in-person education for the entire year, but it's going to be a challenging thing to do. It's going to require a lot of testing. Unvaccinated students and staff will definitely have to be masked in school, and it's an open question who else will be. That's the big active debate now. Can fully vaccinated students and staff, is it safe for them to be unmasked while at school? And that's what we'll be working out during the summer. But we need to really ramp up testing, because that's going to be a big feature of school next year. Commissioner Bretherton.
Yes, Dr. Locke, I was just wondering, do you have any insight into whether we're going to see vaccines for younger students before the school year?
I don't think it's going to happen before the school year starts. I think that 12 and up is really going to be it until at least September. There is some talk that the manufacturers have applied, or actually they've been doing the research for 5 and up is going to be the next tier to be vaccinated. But the thought is the very earliest that would be approved is in September after school has started, and it'll probably be later than that. It'll probably be during the school year. So right now we're focusing on 12 and up and urging parents to, you know, unlike some other vaccines, you know, very often parents start thinking vaccine in late August, you know, getting kids caught up on their vaccine series, which will be necessary. You know, the non-COVID vaccines matter too. So kids will need to be up to date on measles vaccine and other required vaccines. But in terms of COVID, you really want to be getting your kids vaccinated now because of that 5 to 6. Actually, just Pfizer vaccine is the only one licensed. So that takes 5 weeks from when you have the first dose before the student is fully immunized. So now is the time to start. Don't wait until the end of August, because you really want kids to be fully protected at the point they actually go to school. And then I've got some great questions from KPTZ this week, but I'll kind of turn it over to the commissioners first.
Hi, Dave. I don't have any new questions.
I've got a couple. We had some public comment today, you know, citing some numbers about 9,000 deaths from the vaccine. And I'm wondering what's your updated best information about side effects of the vaccine on a national level?
Yeah, those reports are simply untrue. And what it's based on, it's really the anti-vaccination forces are conflating the deaths that are reported in what's called the VAERS system. So there's this vaccination adverse reporting system that has been in effect for decades. We do this with all vaccines. Anyone can report to it. And so there's been around 6,000 deaths of people who have been vaccinated and then have died after being vaccinated. But that's only a temporal association. And there needs to be more investigation after that point. It's appropriate to report those things, but then the question is, was it the vaccine or was it something else? Because every day about 8,000 Americans die, and a certain percentage have vaccines. So just the fact that you died after the vaccine does not prove that the vaccine caused it. And in fact, we have no evidence that the vaccine is causing those deaths. The official mortality count from vaccination is actually 3. It's not 9,000. There are 3 deaths that were associated with the blood clotting disorder with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that probably were related to the vaccine. But even that's complicated because initially we were treating those blood clots incorrectly. The treatment we were giving to people was actually making it worse. And so we learned the correct treatment, and the survival rate is now quite good after that very rare complication. But we're essentially seeing no mortality with the messenger RNA vaccines, which is extraordinary. So those reports are simply untrue. And it's kind of a desperate effort to scare people about a vaccine that is actually one of the safest and most effective vaccines that's ever been developed. And we're really fortunate for that. There were, you know, over 100 different vaccine candidates have been tried. Most of them are ineffective, but there are a few that emerge from that pack that are highly effective, and they're the ones that are being developed. Eventually, we'll have about a half dozen really effective COVID vaccines to use in the world.
How many people have been vaccinated in the U.S. so far, roughly?
It's over 150 million. And that's the ultimate sort of safety measure. We're never really sure about a vaccine. Usually vaccines are fully approved after they've been tested in about 100,000 people. And then we don't really know the true safety profile until about 3 million people have been vaccinated. But we're way, way past that point. And so if we were seeing deaths and serious complications, we would be seeing them all over the place, including in Washington State, and we're just not. And in fact, there's just a huge number of rumors that are circulating that are maliciously untrue. I think the most pernicious one is this that COVID vaccination impacts fertility rates. That's really scaring a lot of people away. And no vaccines affect fertility. It's something that it just vaccines do not do that. They act in a completely different way. And we have absolutely no evidence of fertility effects with COVID vaccines. And we have, millions and millions of women in childbearing age have had this vaccine. In fact, we strongly recommend it for women considering childbearing is to get vaccinated, because being pregnant with COVID you're at much higher risk of life-threatening complications.
And then to follow up on that, 630,000 or so people have died in the U.S. of COVID? And how many people have had COVID, as far as we know, in the U.S.?
I actually don't have the off the top of my head the exact number. It's a huge number, probably in the order of 30% of the U.S. population has had COVID. In some states, it's more like 40-50% of the people in the state have had it. And our confirmed case number is not the true number as well. We think that there's probably 4 undiagnosed cases of COVID for every diagnosed case. When you're looking at a vaccine, you're always comparing the risks and the benefits. And in the case of these vaccines, the benefits just enormously outweigh any risks. The real risk of the vaccine is that they can make you feel sick. Everyone here who's been vaccinated has probably felt these short-term side effects after the vaccine. That's really the risk of the vaccine. And the benefit from it is the immunity that you derive going through that period of having your immune system activated and feeling like you're coming down with a cold for a couple of days.
Go ahead.
I've got one. the booster shots. What's on the horizon around booster shots? I've heard that question. I forgot that I'd heard that question a few times in the last week.
The manufacturers, they're developing boosters, which is an appropriate thing for them to do. The research so far is in terms of duration of immunity is encouraging, that we really only know duration of immunity from the first tier of people who were vaccinated, which was kind of starting about this time last year is when they started testing the current vaccines in clinical trials. And so those people, the initial study subjects have maintained high antibody and the what's called cellular immune response. Although antibodies naturally drop off over time. I think the thing that's really likely to drive booster shots is the variants. At the current rate of variant development, we're likely to see variants that are less sensitive to vaccines. And for a reason, I'll explain a bit with one of the KPTZ questions. And it's possible to make variants that are more targeted to the, make vaccines that are targeted to the new variants. And so I think very, very similar to why we have flu shots that are different every year, we will likely have a booster shot, not because you need more immunity to the original strain of COVID, but because you need immunity, you need better immunity to the new strains. And it's likely that a booster would be timed about 1 year from the initial vaccine. But right now, what we're watching for is the first wave of people that were vaccinated. So in the clinical trials, and then healthcare workers who were sort of vaccinated in last September, are we seeing any increased infection rates in those populations? That would be a signal that the boosters are necessary. And so far, that's not the case. The immunity seems robust. So people should not be concerned about getting a booster in the next several months, but it's an open question. And personally, I think it's going to happen. I think we will eventually have annual COVID boosters. That's going to be the best way to control the pandemic.
Thank you.
I have one question. I think a lot of people are surprised that that our rate per 100,000 is certainly not high by any other standard, but it is, you know, consistent with where we've been throughout the pandemic, even though we have one of the highest rates of vaccination. Can you describe, kind of generalize about the kinds of cases we're seeing right now in Jefferson County, where they're coming from? What's the source of many of those? Are they vaccinated folks? That kind of information?
They're all unvaccinated, number one, as we expect, and they're in clusters. So for instance, we had of the 10 cases last week, five of them were in one household. So every single person in the household tested positive. Fortunately, none were hospitalized, but we have had hospitalizations. I believe there's two people in the hospital right now, one in the ICU with COVID. So it is still happening. I think our true case rate is higher than our confirmed case rate because, like many areas, we're moving to more home testing. Anybody can buy a home testing kit for around $20, and people are doing that. And if you have symptoms or if you have exposure risks, the home tests are quite accurate. So if you test yourself at home and you test positive, you very likely have COVID, and although you're not required to, we really request that you let us know at the health department because we have a lot of helpful information and services we can offer you and help you try to not spread that infection to someone else. But that's the pattern we're seeing. We've been seeing across the region, we've been seeing outbreaks in church and social settings. So what we're seeing is what we expected, and that is indoor transmission among unvaccinated, unmasked people with sort of not casual or transient exposure, but, you know, prolonged people together, talking, singing, interacting indoors for hours and hours at a time. That's how we now know COVID is airborne transmission indoors among, by and large, unmasked individuals.
And I think at least one of the outbreaks, the church outbreak in Clallam County, was attributed to one death or two?
Two deaths, very tragically. And that's what we don't want to see those statistics at this point are heartbreaking. You know, a year ago, these were not preventable, or we were doing our best to prevent them. Now I regard all of those are preventable deaths, that you do not have to die of COVID-19 now. A vaccine will save your life, but that message is just not getting through.
Any more questions for Dr. Lux? We hand it over to Willie.
Yes, KPTZ questions.
Oh, sorry, KPTZ questions first. Thank you.
Okay. Well, this the first one really brings out the university professor persona in me. It asks about, I'd like to understand spike proteins. And they understand it's in the virus, it's in the vaccines. And it's really important to understand what that's going about on with that, because to really understand spike proteins, you have to know a little bit about viruses in general. And that is that in nature, there's a huge number of viruses, most of which don't affect humans at all. It's the only viruses that affect humans are the ones that have learned the trick of getting into our cells. And that's what the spike protein is all about with the coronavirus. That's the coronavirus's trick for attaching to a human cell and invading it. And specifically, the coronavirus's trick is it's evolved this, it's actually called a glycoprotein. It's a mixture of amino acids and sugar. So it's a physical protein structure called the spike protein that is the exact shape to fit onto what's called the ACE2 receptor in the human body. And the ACE2 receptor is there, it has to do with blood pressure control, has nothing to do with the immune system or anything else, but this virus has learned to attach to that particular human receptor. And so we've known for a long time that coronaviruses could be dangerous and that the spike protein is their Achilles heel. Because if the virus can't attach to our cells, then it can't invade the cells. That's why virtually all of the vaccines target the spike protein, and they do it in different ways. It's the goal of all of the vaccines to produce antibodies that attach to the spike protein. But one other thing to realize is it's not just one antibody attaching and completely covering the spike protein. The spike protein is large enough that it has all these different binding sites on it, the different antibodies attached to. And that's why as variants occur, there are actually variants in the spike protein. The spike protein mutates, it takes on different shapes. And some of the antibodies that we produce from vaccine are no longer a good fit on that protein. But some of the vaccine-induced antibodies are still a good fit. And that's why the vaccine that was developed with the original form of spike protein still works with some of the variant spike proteins. But unfortunately, as the virus keeps mutating, it's likely to be less and less vaccine sensitive. And so we'll need modified vaccines to adjust to that kind of constant mutation of the spike protein. So that's my science lecture for the day. But for people that are really interested, that it's there's way, way more detail about this, about receptor binding domains and things like that. So it's a very interesting science story. And we're fortunate that we're at this stage in history where we have a very good understanding of how this all works, and we can manipulate it in a way to make very sophisticated vaccines. If we didn't have that technology, we'd be in a lot worse shape than we are right now. There was a question about how long is it going to take to get the three emergency use approved vaccines fully approved. And that's something The FDA has not announced the timeline for it. But the Pfizer applied for full approval in May. Moderna applied in June. Normally, it takes the FDA 10 to 12 months to do their full approval. And they're reportedly trying to accelerate that process. But they also don't want to cut corners. What's really speeding the process up is there's such a huge amount of data. You know, there's 150 million people that have been vaccinated. So there's a huge amount of safety data on these vaccines that normally wouldn't be present. I'd urge people to, these vaccines will be fully approved. And it will be exactly the same vaccine that we have now. So waiting for full approval does not make sense as from a safety standpoint. That, you know, if we were going to find something that would block these vaccines from approval, we would have found it long ago. So full approval is kind of a formal step. It's desirable for the pharmaceutical companies because it allows them to directly market their vaccine to the public. That's the main effect of full approval. And it also, some legal experts think it may increase the legal case for mandating vaccination in the military, in healthcare settings. You know, full approval may be connected to that. But it really doesn't have any meaning in terms of safety. And if, in fact, full approval is several months away, that is way too long to wait to get vaccinated. So unless they just have hardcore opposition to vaccination, should really do it now. I strongly recommend that people not wait for full approval because the variants are here, they're spreading, and they're going to spread a lot more efficiently in the fall than they are in the summer. So you really need to get your immune system ready for that now and not wait till some future date. There was another question that sort of implied that, well, maybe once it's fully improved, that will increase vaccination rates. And I'm not too hopeful about that. I don't really think that's what's holding people back. I think part of it, they're probably, you know, 15% of the U.S. population just do not believe in vaccines, period. It's not just this vaccine, it's the other ones too. And they're unlikely to change their views. And then, unfortunately, the rest, I think, it kind of comes down to who you believe. You know, and if you believe, you know, Fox News and certain websites, you're probably afraid to get the vaccine, and that's unfortunate. And we'll try our best to, you know, earn the trust of people and point them towards credible science. This is a big national challenge, and it's not going to be won just by the public health community. You know, we need everyone involved. And then finally, there was kind of a technical question. Is AstraZeneca likely to be recognized as an effective COVID vaccine in the U.S.? It has implications for foreign visitors, and indeed it does. The vaccine has to be approved in the U.S. for a foreign visitor using that to count for being fully vaccinated. And the AstraZeneca vaccine, ironically, you know, the fact that it's being made in the U.S., we just donated 60 million doses to other countries, but it's not licensed in the U.S. yet, and we're not even sure the manufacturer is going to apply for emergency use authorization. And this is especially significant for Canadians. we think the Canadian border is going to open up likely in the next month or so. And most Canadians have gotten vaccinated, those who have gotten vaccinated, it's been with the AstraZeneca vaccine. So they have to work this out fairly quickly. The AstraZeneca vaccine is very similar to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and there's no technical reason why it should not be regarded as an effective vaccine, but it's kind of a legal thing. And right now, that the U.S. does not actually have a requirement that people coming in be fully vaccinated. It has a requirement that people entering in the country be tested for COVID. You have to have a negative test. But that vaccine requirement is likely coming. And there are U.S. citizens are now being allowed to travel to a number of countries, Europe, most notably, if you're fully vaccinated, you know, with a European approved vaccine. And all three licensed vaccines in the U.S. are approved in Europe. So those work, but there's going to be more vaccines in the pipeline. The Novavax vaccine will be approved in the not too distant future, and maybe even AstraZeneca will be in the U.S. As borders start opening up again, this will become a significant issue, and it's important that, you know, people have a record of their vaccination. If you want to travel across borders, you're going to need that it's my understanding that Hawaii is going to drop their requirement for COVID testing before you go to Hawaii, as long as you can demonstrate that you're fully vaccinated. So maybe that's another incentive for people to get off the fence and get vaccinated, you know, whatever it takes.
Great. Is that all of your questions from KPTZ?
Yes. Thank you.
Welcome, Willie. Hope you had a nice weekend.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. I really don't have a lot to update on today. As I've been reporting the past couple of weeks, we're kind of winding down on the operational front. We have no more clinics on the calendar, with the exception of the veteran stand down on July 26th. We do have a couple requests from the community for vaccination pop-ups at a few events as far out as September, actually. So we're kind of considering those and kind of talking through our long-term vaccination strategy. Again, we'll be ready to help distribute booster shots when and if those are available and needed. But for the most part, things are quiet here on the emergency operations front. So please give us a call, 344-9791. If you have questions about vaccinations and need help scheduling, if you have questions about testing, if you're homebound and actually need to get vaccinated, et cetera. But again, for the most part, not much to report from my end for the first time in a while. The other thing I will say, however, just on another front, is that hospitalization and bed occupancy across the state has been abnormally high, and not particularly with COVID patients. COVID hospitalizations are down for the most part. It's mostly among the unvaccinated, as we've talked about here. But people are finally getting elective surgery after putting it off for a long while. 4th of July caused a little bit of a bump with, you know, your annual firework accidents, et cetera. So just a note of caution for folks that, and thankfully it's starting to ease up a little bit, but we have had a shortage of hospital beds across the state due to this increased activity, due to this increase in surgery. So I'm just a note for folks. I know no one goes out looking to get hospitalized, but just a note of caution for folks that's been an issue we've been keeping an eye on. Thankfully, though, since the 4th of July, locally, we have had bed space open up and we are in a decent position. But again, a word of caution for folks. The other word of caution I'd like to give while I'm up on my soapbox, we do have that countywide burn ban. I know some folks, gotten notes. I know the fire chiefs hear a lot. Some folks are irritated with that. But really, the current state of the fuels here in the county. One errant ember that gets carried away by the wind can cause a massive amount of destruction. So even with the best laid safety plans, we are a ticking time bomb. It doesn't need to be a brown and dry looking greenery for it to catch fire and cause a major fire. So please do respect that burn ban. That's in place for a reason. We're in the middle of fire season. We're seeing what's happening down in California, down in Oregon, et cetera. So just another note for folks to be cautious there. I know it's been an exhausting year and a half being cautious due to COVID, and now we're with the heat wave and with this fire season. It is quite a bit, but just a request to folks to be cognizant of that and keep an eye out and practice any grilling, any smoking, et cetera. Please practice that safely.
Thank you, Willie. Any questions?
I have one. I'm just wondering, as people reach out to set up pop-up clinics and or try to set them up with DEM, are you kind of requesting groups of five or six to make sure that we're using vaccine efficiently? Is that part of the scheme?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yeah, that's specifically what we're doing. We want to make sure we're getting our bang for our buck. We want to make sure that we're not wasting any vaccine. So if anyone does reach out and wants some sort of pop-up, some sort of mobile clinic, we're happy to accommodate. We just need some firm commitments from folks. Five to 10, even that few we'd be willing to do as long as they're solid commitments. We learned a lesson early on that we were doing some pop-up events and we had great interest from these groups, but we didn't have real firm commitments. So the turnout was a little bit underwhelming. So again, we're happy to accommodate small groups. We want to get as many people vaccinated as possible. We just want firm commitments and we don't want to waste any vaccine. So reach out, we'll chat, we'll work with you on getting those commitments in place. So don't hesitate, we're happy to do it.
And second question, can you just tell us exactly what the burn ban entails now? I know it's expanded, but can you just for the sake of the public tell us what should we stay away from currently?
Oh, yes. So I should have it in front of me just so I don't screw anything up. I apologize. I don't want to give anyone false information off the top of my head, but brush clearing fires, recreational fires, all that kind of fun stuff. Let me pull it up again. I don't want to misspeak here on something that's important.
I can just say that I was reading it this weekend and it was okay for us to have a barbecue on our port, on our concrete porch. I could confirm that for Ike, my husband. That's about all I could confirm.
Yeah, so it's all outdoor burning to include campfires, pits, and use of charcoal briquettes, now banned. Any outdoor burning like brush clearing burning, all that kind of stuff on your property. But it's available on the East Jeff Fire and Rescue website. So I think if anyone has any firm questions, go through there and read it in its entirety.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions for Willie or Dr. Locke?
Thanks for all you do, you guys. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
I'd like to correct a comment I made earlier.
Okay. So should we say goodbye then to Dr. Locke and Willie? Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, Paulette Del Ario sent me an email regarding my comment about people in the hallway that were masked, and that they were people we hadn't yet reached to get vaccinated. Well, she pointed out that some folks who are vaccinated choose to wear a mask anyway. And so I just wanted to correct that comment in this public forum.
Thank you. Yeah, that's true everywhere, isn't it? Okay, we are going to take a recess. Should we do a slightly longer?
We're fine.
Okay. Let's do a recess until 10:40.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.
And again, don't forget a recording of today's reports will be available later today. for streaming online at kptz.org. This is Don Trethewey. I'll be with you until 11.